I'm a shot in the dark, wary sort of spark.
Welcome back to the Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. Oh, I don't know. I got some of you have been waiting to hear that for a while, have you not? I've been waiting to say that for a while. Here's a coffee slurp in commemoration of the moment. Oh, rock me los gigantes de Commonwealth Coffee. All right, so I'm back, kinda. So I know it's been a while. I don't even know what episode this is. I know what episode this is. This is episode one of the new show is what it is. We're not looking to the past. Okay, what happened? Why have I been gone? Okay, first of all, I want to give a massive, massive back in the counter position shout out to all of my listeners who were concerned about me and reached out. So, I mean, a non-exhaustive list would be John Coons, Brian Long, Sharon in Texas, the lovely and talented Allie Kavanaugh. Who else? I mean, tons of people. I'm drawing a blank on who else has contacted me. Anyway, long story short, tons of people worried about me. The few of you, there's a few of you. Jeff Neal, I don't think you ever checked on me, but we're Facebook friends, so you know that I'm okay. You can see my day-to-day activity. anyway, so I don't know. A bunch of people checked on me, kind of worried about me. So here's what happened. Here's why I've been gone for a while. No big deal, really. I mean, well, it is kind of a big deal, but not like tragic or anything. So what started is, for Breadbox Media, it's had this business model for a while where we were trying to be an online streaming network, and you know, so we had these live shows and all this stuff, and it just got to the point where it's like, in our startup, it was just not sustainable anymore. There was no way to keep doing that. And as we started really hammering into our statistics and really getting the numbers, we started seeing that almost all of you were listening on demand. So we kind of heard what, you know, we kind of smelled what you were cooking and said, hey, let's just start giving them on-demand content. So now Breadbox Media is a newly revamped podcast network. So I'm not live anywhere. There won't be live shows at all on this. Not like there ever was. But on our network, I mean, we have people with live shows every day with call-ins and all that. That's not happening anymore. That is where they wanted me to go. And that's where I was going to head once we were kind of full time with this. But that's not going to happen now. You're going to get a podcast. And but you're like, you guys had a stream? I didn't know. I know you were all listening to the podcast. So when that came around, it was like, so then the second announcement is, you know, that's going to be a weekly podcast. And that gets more to like where I've been. So when that came around, I've been knocking out for a while, like 5, then 4, then 3, then sometimes 2 a week. And I didn't realize how much the crush of fitting in a recording session every single weekday, or attempting to every single day during the week, was kind of like weighing on me. And not so much just even the time of it, but the trying to think through my life and be kind of, how to say it, when I first started doing the show, it was fun, because it was kind of like, I compared it to wine tasting back in the day. When I learned how to taste wine, I started noticing all the other smells and sense experiences in my world. It made me change. It changed the way I tasted food. It changed the way I drank wine, but it also changed the way I walked through a lumber yard, right? I've talked about that several times in the show. If you're an old school listener, you've heard that. If there's a buzz in the background, I'm in my home studio and there is a AC on across the room. But you know what? It's hot in Denver, Colorado right now. This AC doesn't keep up. And this room would be sweltering if I turned it off. So if, you know, we'll see if maybe the audio geniuses over at Breadbox can take that hum out, if there is one. Usually it is not too bad from this distance with this mic. So anyway, I initially had this experience where kind of ideologically, or kind of commenting, or kind of noticing connections between things, having to do the show all the time cause me to pay attention and capture all the time. What, you know, kind of what, because you're constantly needing something to talk about, right? But I think that without me really knowing it, that got hard. And if I had nothing other to do than the counter position, then I think I could do that. I mean, I could be a daily radio show host for a couple of hours. I could go into a booth and they could cue me and I could do the intro and I could take calls. And I mean, that would be easy. I could do that if that's what I did for a living, but this isn't what I do for a living. So it was, I realized it was kind of bearing on me. So whenever we took this huge leap, and there was no like, oh, there has to be something on the stream tonight or we're going to be running a rerun. That pressure was off for a second, and I was going to be going to. I'm like, you know what? I've got 311 episodes out there. Let those run in the interim while we're doing this. I'm taking a week or two off. Now, I meant to jump back out and do a quick show and let you know that that's what was going on. But things kind of just started getting interesting. Some stuff came up, and I didn't get around to that. And at that point, at some point, I didn't realize how much I needed a break until I took a break. And I didn't realize the break had been so long. I think John Kuhn shot me a Facebook message and pointed out that I hadn't recorded since mid-April. I mean, I thought it had been about a month. It had been a while. So I took mics on a couple of trips to do some. I had some downtime, but then the downtime got kind of like knocked out by business drama or something like that. So anyway, just I don't know. I just wasn't ready to come back till I was ready to come back, and so now I'm back. Here we go. Let's see. Where are we going now? There's a question. This is going to be kind of the first one of the new format. This is going to be a little more like the old format because I'm going to be just kind of off the cuff, really, really off the cuff. Now that I got only one show a week to do. Now, that's I only have to do a show a week. I can jump in and do two a week. And there's sometimes when I'll kind of throw in interviews or I'll, you know, do a quick little thing. There's also no set format. You won't hear breaks. So, some of you who get annoyed by my multiple uses of the phrase humble host, John Kuntz, you won't have to put up with that anymore because there are no breaks. You're going to hear me one time and that's it, unless I just need to go to the bathroom or something. So some of these shows will be maybe 20, 30 minutes long. Some of them might be a couple hours long. We're in podcast land, ladies and gentlemen, so I can do whatever I want. No, these aren't streaming. There's no commercial breaks. Now, eventually there will be some live reads. There will start becoming some sponsors on these. So at some point you're going to hear me hawking something, and that's just part of the business model. So buckle up, Buttercup. You're going to get sold to a little bit. But I kind of like that. I'm hoping that they'll let me just only pick the advertisers that I really, really want to advertise for, that I really believe in, and we could find hopefully I can find. So if you have something you would like to advertise on the counter position, and you would like me to be the one to build a beautiful argument for why someone should come buy your product at the beginning of my show, email me. Probably the best place to do it is just andrew@calix.org. calix.org. That's the fastest way to do it. thecounterposition@gmail.com works too. Anyway, so we can plug what you got. So that's going to be happening at some point. But here's the thing though. Now I got more time, and things that I didn't have time to do before, like do more episodes of Over the Counter with Mark Giesecheck. That's another podcast I do. And so if you haven't listened to that, there's like 40 episodes of Over the Counter out there. It's a conversation podcast with the occasional three-way interview podcast with me and Mark Giesecheck, a scripture professor here in Denver that I'm friends with. And it's kind of like, but we don't talk about theology. We don't talk about politics, and we don't talk about the culture war. And we talk about everything else. So, and it's good. The latest one, number 40 on narrativity, is really, really good. It's probably our best episode. I didn't know I could do something that good. Anyway, so that's out there, but we're going to start doing those hopefully at least a couple a month, maybe weekly if we can find time. And Another thing is that I'm kicking around something I've been wanting to do. And I think I'm going to start a second podcast of my own that's unaffiliated and probably not overly attached to only the Catholic world. There will be a Catholic stuff on it. I'm not sure what direction I'm going to go with it, but it's going to consist almost exclusively of very, very deep dive interviews with big guns. It'll probably get super geeky, super intellectual. But I'm hoping to get way outside the Catholic world too, but go to some big guns. I want to talk to some big, big guns in the Catholic world about things beyond just like doctrine. And so I want to go to a bigger picture, and I want to get people who are not in the Catholic world and push them and talk about some more fundamental principles and understanding of reality, and try to talk a little more architectonically, you know, a little more on the basic level that holds everything together, you know. So that's just a little experiment. I'm still working on the brand on that and kind of what I want to do with it. So you can see that coming out soon, hopefully. And see, here we are at like the 11-minute mark. And normally I would be going, all right, just kind of, you know, stumble a little bit, just kind of like, you know, kind of waste a little time because you're up against a break. Don't start another big topic. But I don't have to do that. Look at that. 11 minutes, 22 seconds into the show. What am I doing? Keeping going. That's what I'm doing. So that's going to happen. And also, Calyx is kind of exploding right now. We've caught some public attention in the church and been at the center of some big conversations among influencers, and our method is kind of, it seems like all of a sudden the world is talking about pre-evangelization, and people are talking about tilling the soil before you start throwing seeds, and they're talking about how do you talk to the unchurched and all that, and old boy here has been talking about that for 20 years. So hopefully we're about to hit our moment. So lots of cool stuff happening with Calyx, which I'm going to tell you a story today about something amazing and life-changing that happened. And that's going to end in kind of like the direction we're going with Calyx, my project. So I won't get too far into that, but I will say that just continuing the media predictions, I'm going to be doing probably a new Calyx podcast. I've got the place held and everything for it. I've got a pod bean up for it. I'm trying to figure out how we're going to go about doing it. You know, it's kind of the tools we're using and what format it's going to be, but we're probably going to do a Calyx podcast, and there's probably going to be, I'm not sure if these are going to be two separate things, but I'm going to start putting out some very, very focused media content for Calyx, just little media snippets about ideas, meditations, kind of little mini sermons, little practical tips, training tools. I'm just going to start putting out a ton of audio content for the people in Calyx land who are wanting to figure out how to use hospitality to create community, in which a kind of community in which hospitality and beauty and justice and craft and all these true goods that the unchurched kind of still love can be used to earn the right to be heard, to talk about these deeper things. So I'm going to start throwing out some audio there. So if you're a real super fan and you're just dying, even if you're not super into coffee, there'll be some stuff. If you like this show, you'll probably like that audio. So that's going to be coming out. Me and Adam, I almost got shot by Wendell Berry Beach, are going to be collaborating on a project. Adam, we were supposed to start, but I was lagging my feet and getting too busy. So Adam just jumped the gun and did a bang up job of it and, launched this thing called the Denver Faith and Culture Meeting. And so, it's a purposely ecumenical thing. It'll be, 3 meetings per topic, 4 topics per year, 1 meeting per month, and then some events and stuff in between. The first one we're doing is called The Gift of Good Land. And so each of these speakers that are going to do like little TED-style talks and stuff, they're going to have a podcast for Denver Faith and Culture Meeting. So they've asked me to host the Denver Faith and Culture Meeting podcast. So I'll be sitting down with each of these TED Talk style people and different people we bring in and different interesting people. And so there's going to be some really new content and some interviews and whatnot happening. And that won't be my project, but I am going to be helping steer the ship and I'm going to be hosting the project. And that could, that'd be a good way for me to help that project out. That is a beautiful project. You can Google Denver Faith and Culture Meeting and look at what's going on over there. And that's a model that I'd like to see. If it works here, I'd like to see it moved around a little bit. So audio, media. What else are we doing? I don't think I have anything other audio stuff. That's probably enough, isn't it? But suffice to say, between this show at least once a week, over the counter a couple times a month, the Denver Faith and Culture Meeting, an ocean of small bite content coming out of Calix, and a potential big new podcast, maybe monthly, maybe bi-monthly interviews, then you're going to be able to get a decent amount of audio out of me, even though we're only doing a weekly podcast on the counter position. All right, so there's the map forward. That's what my world's going to look like audio-wise. Now, media-wise, a couple interesting things coming up. We are, we've got further in the details, and it does look like me and Chris Stefanik are going to be recording an episode of his new TV show that's on EWTN, which if you haven't watched it, go watch it. It's really, really good. It's called Chris Stefanik, Real Life Catholic. It's on EWTN, and it's something they've just never done before. And it's something more like you would see like on the Travel Channel or Discovery or something. It's really good. And Chris is amazing. And for his next season, we're going to do an episode where he and I head down to Costa Rica and harvest and process coffee and then trace this coffee back through the chain back to my shop in Denver, which will hopefully be my shop in Denver by that time. Ha ha ha. Anyway, so that's going to happen. And I'm still in conversation with his team. We're talking about doing something. There's been a lot of conversation. I've pitched this past a bunch of people. A bunch of people are excited about it. And it is possible that we might do some kind of video content, maybe an actual show that will go straight to Apple and, you know, Amazon and all that, and then eventually to Netflix. And you may see it on EWTN or something like that, but we're building it for the masses. We're going to make Catholic media for the masses. Something that if you like Anthony Bourdain, or if you like, you know, some of the Travel Channel shows, or if you like stuff on Discovery or Nat Geo, you're going to be interested in what we're doing. We're just going to run around, look at some cool places, talk to some cool people, make some cool food, and talk about cool ideas. And I'm not sure if that's going to happen. That's kind of a pipe dream at this moment, but it's a pipe dream with a strategy project attached to it and some meetings happening. So, but I have a lot of pipe dreams that have meetings attached to them over the years that don't happen. So no promises there. All right. So there you go. There was the big path forward for the media coming out of this mouth. All right. One more coffee sip. Hold on. See, that's the one thing you're going to have to put up with, because I don't have a break anymore, you know? I need to get a sharper edged cup so I can like drink without slurping. I have this big, beautiful hand thrown pottery mug and I love it, but it's like you gotta go to get it. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about. I'm not gonna do politics on the show. Trump's still crazy, but he's doing some good stuff in some places, some idiotic stuff in some other places, and. It seems like there's a bunch of Russians in the woodpile. So, I mean, stay tuned. I think we see where this is going. You know what? In prophetic shout out to Jonathan Gailey and Matt Gaetz, because their campaign back during the campaign was elect Trump, then impeach. Basically, it was the slow play to get Pence in the office. So if you know what, if we could have Mike Pence in the office, I'll take it over Donald Trump any day of the week. I still would have rather had Rubio or Rand Paul. And, you know, I don't know what I think about the healthcare debate. I think everybody's asking the wrong questions. And it is, I tell you what is interesting, though. There is a fundamental I said I wasn't going to talk about politics. This is philosophy. There's a fundament. This is exposing a fundamental difference in the way that we talk about freedom, and I think it's exposing the kind of the lack, at least the tension between the Enlightenment, kind of John Locke, our founding fathers, with some influence on natural law and stuff from the classical tradition, but this classical liberal tradition that I've always been a part of, that definition of freedom, and kind of the Catholic definition of freedom. And I think there's a difference between the Catholic definition of freedom and the Eastern Catholic definition of freedom, the Eastern Christian definition of freedom. So that might be a show coming up. I might want to bring somebody on that knows about such things and do a deep dive. Maybe I'll do it on the other show. Maybe I'll try to get David Schindler on the new podcast and do a deep dive on the notion of freedom. Anyway, that's all I'm going to say is that this whole healthcare debate, rights and responsibilities and freedom and what we owe people and what we don't owe people and the common good and liberty and these different definitions of these things, it's a really interesting focal point where, I don't know, I am, for the first time in a very long time on this issue, I am kind of on the fence on it. I don't really know what I think about it. So, okay, political section, I was like, what, a minute and a half? That's not too bad. All right, so I want to tell you a story. And this is one of the things that just, my life got really interesting while I was off the air. And one of the things that got interesting was this story that I'm going to tell you. So I have this friend, Mike Colston. And Mike was my Protestant doppelganger. Big guy, beard, owned a coffee house, used it for mission. You know, he's the one guy on earth that I didn't have to explain all this stuff to. I mean, we would disagree over a ton of stuff. He was a very low church, informal Protestant, charismatic. I am a recovering charismatic, sometimes picking up the babies that have been thrown out with the bathwater Catholic. But when it came to using craft, justice, beauty, all this stuff to earn the right to be heard to talk about something else and what a shop looks like that does that, he and I didn't argue about it at all. He just got it, and I got it, and we got it. Now, so I had a really frustrating board meeting with my board. I love my board if you're listening. And I just felt like they just didn't get it. They didn't get what I was trying to do. And there was just all this talk about business and stuff. And I was trying to talk about mission. And so we had this meeting and I just, you know, it ended kind of with me ranting and getting mad. And Andrew Beach is sitting in the meeting, and he and I were in one place and everybody else was on video or audio. And so we got done. I was walking around yelling and screaming and venting and being frustrated. And I threw open my laptop, opened up Facebook to look at something, and I saw that my friend Mike Colston had died. Now, Mike was 42 years old, and he left behind a wife and two kids. And that calmed me down real quick. Because at the moment, I thought that it was probably heart attack or stroke or something. He's a big guy like me, probably worked way too hard, stressed out too hard like me, didn't take super great care of himself all the time. I assumed that's what was going on. And it wasn't what happened, and I'm not going to talk about that. But so I see Mike's gone. And so I bought a good bottle of Syrah, put on Mozart's Requiem, and relaxed and forgot about my board and about my troubles and just tried to remember and be grateful for experiencing my friend Mike. And so after going back and forth, I was like, gosh, I had already booked everything to go to Tim Ferland's wedding in Minneapolis, and which was a great time, by the way. Minneapolis, Twin Cities, what a cool town. I really, really love you guys. I want to put something there. I'll talk about Minneapolis some other time, because there's a lot I want to talk about Minneapolis. Lots happened since the last show. I could fill several hours filling you in on the weekly ground up or the catch up. So I was kind of like, man, I really can't afford to go to California. It's going to be expensive at the last minute. So I waited, and then kind of found out. And it was, that, you know, it was like a week away. So it wasn't right like next day ticket. I was able to get in and out of LAX for not too bad. So I went to Mike's funeral. Now, I got to Mike's funeral. I got up, stayed with the Schneers. Me and Justin got up and went to the funeral. And it was a Protestant funeral. So it was kind of like what in Catholic land we would call a wake, but with praise and worship and a sermon. It was kind of a cross between a religious service and what we would call a wake, you know, because it was a very low church. It was beautiful. It was spectacular. And I met so many interesting, good people there that Mike meant a lot to. And that meant a lot to Mike, I assume, too. But so I'm sitting in this service, this funeral, and the time came that people were invited to get up and talk about, you know, their relationship with Mike and everything, and they asked them to say who you are and how you know him and who what you do or whatever, you know. So I'm listening to these stories, and I mean, after about five of them, I look over at Justin Schneer and I say, dude, we're at my funeral. And he says, totally. It's like every story could have been about me or the kind of stories that will be told at my funeral or my wake. It was surreal. When you have that much in common with someone and your life path has mirrored someone that much and the meaning that is in your life is present in someone else's life and they die like that, it is a surreal experience. I mean, every single story was, you know, when we moved to Camarillo from such and such place, we didn't know where to get coffee. We found Element on Yelp. And we came in and saw this big guy with a beard smiling from behind the counter. And he made me this amazing natural process Ethiopian. It just tasted like blueberries and it was so good. And I was just ruined. I couldn't drink coffee anywhere else. And, you know, it was always the highlight of my day to see him behind the bar. I come in, he always had something interesting to talk about and, you know, was always reading something interesting. And when my dad died, he was really there for me to kind of to listen. And I'm like, and I was hearing story after story like this. And about 10 stories in, I look over at Justin and I'm like, I think my life might have meaning now. And there's the old, I've seen this quote attributed to John Lennon. But I don't know if it really is. It's one of those internet quotes that goes around. But regardless of who said it, it's true. Said that life is what happens when you're making other plans. And I am someone, I mean, down to like my StrengthsFinder profile is futuristic, which means you look to the future, obviously. Context, which means you look to the past to figure out how this all started. And then ideation and intellection, which are both ideas and like thinking and stuff. And my fifth one kind of changes out. It's usually input, which means I collect lots of information so that I can do those things. You'll notice what's not in there is anything about the present. I live obsessing over my past, trying to find some meaning in it, and thinking about the future and trying to figure out where I'm going. And I don't really take a moment to really be where I am, doing what I'm doing with who I'm doing it with. And so it was kind of beautiful in the sense that I realized, oh, wow, there's some meaning in my life that I have been ignoring because it's happening now. It's in this shop, this imperfect shop in this imperfect place and with these imperfect clients, these imperfect projects and with this imperfect person and me imperfect and this imperfect friendship and this group of people that live in this imperfect house. And, you know, it's I live so idealistically in my head towards the future and just casting back to the past to try to figure out where it went wrong so that I'm not living this ideal that I have in my head right now. And it's partially my makeup. It's probably rooted in, you know, being the adult child of an alcoholic. I'm also just like ENFP to the wheels fall off. So I don't know, but it was a wake up call of kind of gratitude in the sense that there's things that I, now that I think about it, happen in my life that if I had to be objective, or I could probably say, yeah, those are probably just as meaningful to the people that are in that story in my life as they are to these folks and Mike. And these are the things that are so important that someone's getting up at someone's funeral and pouring their heart out, crying and talking about it, you know? And I have disregarded their importance. So it kind of, I mean, it kind of put me on the wake up, you know? So I got up and spoke. So I almost didn't go. And then I almost didn't get up and speak. Oh, I forgot to tell you that this all happened during, I was just really frustrated, and I was talking to Father James Mangan and Bethany and people up in Flint, Michigan about kind of what happened to stall that project out. If you're a long-term listener, you know that we had beautiful, amazing, providential craziness happen in Flint that just stalled out. Hopefully we're going to get that going again. Which some really beautiful stuff happened recently that I'm not super at liberty to talk about. But you'll be hearing some announcements about that soon, hopefully. But they, at their suggestion, we started praying the Our Lady on Doer of Knots novena, which I'm telling you, I'm not a big novena guy, and I'm kind of weird devotions and stuff. Me and Ann Breiling both are always talking about, we're just like good, solid sacramental Catholics. Give me the Eucharist, give me confession. If I end up married, if I need to be married, buried, or put a collar put on me, that's fine. You know, if I'm sick, you know, I want to be anointed, but for the most part, the life of the faith comes down to, in, you know, the Eucharist, confession, and all the kind of the, and just trying to read something worth reading that's spiritual and talk to God. Right. My life has gotten more Marian though in the last 15 years, 20 years. And I definitely, the rosary plays a huge role in my devotional life. So anyway, we were doing this novena, which I'm, like I said, I'm skeptical of novenas usually, but years ago I had done this Our Lady on Doer of Knots novena, and it's kind of the big gun, like something always blows up when you do it. It breaks through stuff. It's a good novena. If you have something that's been hammering on you for a while, you're trying to figure something out and you want to just kind of grab the board and shake it at least and get a different situation, do that novena. So I was doing that novena, and one of the intentions I'd been praying was, should I continue focusing on consulting with Calyx, my firm, or should I go through the process of transforming it into a nonprofit that I've been talking about, and should we build a prototype? So that was the conversation that I was having with my board that got me very frustrated too. And so I'd been off. So I was like in the middle of that novena praying that intention, should I build a shop, basically, when Mike died. And so I went to, so we'd finished the novena, and that was the very beginning of the novena. So I got to California, novena ended right about that Wednesday. I think I finished it the night before, and I'm trying to remember the exact timing on this. But anyway, long story short, Mike dies during the novena. I go to California. I almost didn't go and went to his funeral. I almost didn't speak, but I did. And so when I got up, I talked about this very thing about, you know, when you have something so in common with someone, you know, and they die, it's strange because it's like you're at your own funeral. And people were looking at me like the lights were on no one's home except for two or three of us, including Mike's widow, DeMonica, who knows us, and she was just like smiling and nodding her head like, yeah, you guys were like twins in a lot of ways, good and bad. And I got talking about how, you know, the last time I came out, I didn't go see Mike. He had lost the shop, actually, and I didn't call him and go see him because I was so busy, and I started breaking down. I couldn't finish talking. I was crying. I got sat down, you know. Well, people came up to me after me words and thanked me for everything I'd said and asked me what Calyx was and how that worked. And cause I told them what I do and how I knew Mike and how he and I collaborate on so many ideas that I was now pulling the trigger on and stuff. And so the next day, so I went to the, you know, and I went to the reception, met some cool people, was hanging out with Greg Levine, shout out Greg Levine, to the roaster with the roaster of Ragamuffin Coffee, the roaster from Beacon Coffee. A bunch of cool coffee people were there. And so then a couple days later, I got a message through Facebook, through a couple of channels from his dad. And, they said the family wanted to, give me Mike's equipment. I'm going to choke up talking about this. And so, his entire shop, all of his equipment and stuff was in storage. They hadn't got rid of it when they shut the shop down, and they wanted me to have it because they knew that it would continue in mission, his shop. His equipment would continue in mission because we were on the same mission. We were doing the same thing, trying to create places where people could encounter the living God by encountering individual human persons living in community and trying to live beautifully and well, you know? So when you're in the middle of a novena, and this novena, every time I pray the novena, like on the this 3 days after this, and if you're listening, you don't know what a novena is. It's just 9 days of repeated prayer, usually with kind of a structure to the prayer. This involved a rosary with some particular devotions about different parts of your life and stuff. And so after this 9 days of prayer, it's always like on the third or fourth day. And this one, the third or fourth day happened to be the Feast of Our Lady of Fatima. And so on the Feast of Our Lady of Fatima, I inherited a coffee house, basically. So I went, which I'd taken as an answer. You know what? When you're praying about whether you should open a shop and God gives you a shop, though that didn't work, that one's bit me once before. I'm taking that as an answer. So we're not sure where we're going to put it at. We are going to open a shop. That's the big announcement. We are for sure going to do a prototype for Calyx. I have all the equipment, or like 90, 85% of the equipment I need to open a shop now. Mike was running a damn fine shop in Camarillo, California, and his equipment is there to be used by me. So I want to just send a massive shout out to DeMonica Colston and her children, and Rick Colson and his wife, the Mike's parents, and I'm asking all of my listeners to please pray for Mike and his family. Just pour your heart out to God for that family. You have a widow with two kids trying to retool their life after losing a very young father. And just, I feel, and pray for me, because I fight with kind of guilt about this. You know, I feel weird getting blessed so deeply from something so tragic from someone that I love so much. So it's a weird situation. But so there you go. That's one thing that happened to me. A bunch of stuff happened while I was gone. And you'll get a few other things. I traveled all over the place, saw some cool new cities like Minneapolis. Got put in the friend zone by an amazing girl. That one hurt. And just, you know, a bunch of cool stuff happened, a bunch of hard stuff happened since I've been. But I'm back. Here we go. So 38 minutes. Where do we want to go with this? Well, a couple things I want to talk about real fast. So I went out to California, did an amazing kind of a launch, fundraising launch event with Ann Browning for Shrine Coffee, which got a little drama laden afterwards. And just pray for Shrine Coffee and for Ann Browning and for me and everyone involved in that, and for the people of Santa Cruz. And for everybody in the church who's trying to find a way to talk to and reach out to people that are deeply unchurched, because I'm finding out more and more and more that we don't have the tools, we don't have the systems, and we don't have the conceptual tools. We don't have the understanding of what that would look like to do that. But it's funny. So we did this, and then the right about that time. So I've been getting referenced quite a bit. Calyx and myself have been getting mentioned quite a bit in the face in the Forming Intentional Disciples Facebook forum from Sherry Waddell. And I've got to be, I went and interviewed with Sherry, did an interview with her for one of her projects, and just not like recorded, just like she was wanting to pick my brain about some stuff, pre-evangelization and whatnot. And so that's kind of like Calyx has been getting some news, right? People have been talking about Calyx, my project. And so so someone posted the Patreon site, which is where you can give money monthly to projects and stuff over on that forum. And, you know, it was fun, a few good comments. People all kind of get it there, you know. And then someone saw it there and took it and put it over in the Catholic Creatives Facebook forum. So the Catholic Creatives forum is this really cool forum with all the makers in the church, all the communications people and artists and graphic designers and musicians and branding people and all the people who create art and do stuff in the church, mostly for communication to the world about what we believe and what we're doing. And really amazing place with tons of cool people in it. And someone picked that up and posted it over there. And man, it got heated. Like a big old thread came up. And it's interesting. The concept of what is and is not Catholic, what constitutes something being Catholic, and what constitutes evangelization, and what constitutes being something in that process or not, is there's a bunch of presuppositions around that. So it's fun. It got really crazy, and one guy ended up deciding to leave the group, and it was a weird dust up over there, and some really big guns that I really admire kind of came to my defense and were like, I almost didn't have to defend myself or explain Calyx or Shrine Coffee or anything we were doing, because everyone was diving in and defending us. It was cool. And so I saw that there is a new school of people that are some of the most creative people in the church who deeply, deeply really get it. And, I think we're going to make something beautiful. So that was cool. My little part of the world is, over here in Coffee Land and over here in, Earning the Right to Be Heard Land. But there's a whole bunch, there's room for a lot of people. And finally, I've been a fat guy for a long time, right? So I was always the pudgy kid growing up, and you know, had lost weight a few times. I look back at pictures of me in high school, and I'm like 2-3 weeks of ketogenic off of abs, and I thought I was giant. I was a little soft around the edges, but definitely not huge or anything. But I've been a big old fat guy for a long time, and back in 2000, I lost 85 pounds in 5 months, doing low carb, you know, kind of ketogenic, your typical kind of Atkins, Protein Power. Those were the books back then. And I lost 85 pounds in 5 months, and people had interventions. Two different times, friend groups of mine literally did the, like, got around me in a circle, got me in a room for some other purpose, or, you know, after a meeting, this is a safe place. Are you okay? Are you sick? Do you have AIDS? Are you doing drugs? Are you okay? Just like, how are you losing all this weight? And I'm just like, I just stopped eating carbs for the most part. But I lost a ton of weight. And when it was all said and done, at the end of the summer of 2000, I went off to TAC, and I mean, I wasn't ripped, but I wasn't the fat guy anymore, which was really interesting, because it was like my entire adult life I've been the fat guy since, you know, long about 1993. I shot up pretty good right about then, and I'd never been, you know, below that level. And so it really was a change for me, you know, to walk into a room and I'm just another dude in the room. You know, I'm not like, oh, a big guy just walked in the room. I could sit down on an airplane and there's like, I was just like everybody else cramming myself into an airplane seat. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, I would walk into a, it was funny. I used to, one of my shticks used to be is I would go to the bar and, hanging out with my friends and there'd be like some beautiful girl there, like some, the model that everyone else is like scared to talk to. And I would just start throwing tons of game at them, knowing that it was just kind of, I was just being funny, like, oh, the big fat guy is like flirting with you. Everyone thought it was funny and charming or whatever. That was like my shtick, right? And there was one time that I did that and it kind of accidentally, like, she was like, oh, okay, yeah. And I was just like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't, I was just that's my, I used to be fat and I'm sorry, I used to be fat, I'm Catholic, and I was very uncomfortable. But kind of fun too. I mean, it was kind of nice having a, it being the one to say no at some point, you know. So so I've always been the fat guy, right, for a long time. And I went back to Thomas Aquinas College. I wasn't the fat guy anymore, and I put all the weight back on. But I was like, okay, I know how to do this now. It's low carb. Okay, great. I'm going to be low carb. All I got to do, I can just like be however I want to be in college. It's fine. I know I can knock this off in like 4 or 5 months anytime. But I was like having to eat in the dorm. And now, actually, there now, you can really eat well, whatever kind of, you know, especially if you're like low carb or something, you can eat pretty well at that school now. But back then, that was before they were kind of conscious of it. And there was times there were whole meals that were just nothing but carbs and pasta and stuff. So I just, you know, stress and everything, just started eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and stuff and became a big guy again, put it all back on and more. Well, since then, I've been struggling back and forth. I've gotten down a little bit, back up a little bit. But here's the main thing is that every time I would start losing weight, I would get crippling arthritis in my feet, gout in particular. I could be like eating and drinking like a rock star, like doing perfectly. And I would get the kind of arthritis you get when you're just drinking tons of beer and eating lots of crappy food and eating lots of sugar and all stuff. I would get that every time I do good and start losing weight. Now I would get it other times too. So there's like this question, right? So it's frustrated me because I'm like, gosh, man, people think I don't know how to lose weight. People think I just don't have any willpower or something. You know, people probably think I'm just like, I'm weak. And you walk in a room and you're this big fat guy, you know, and everyone's going, oh, man, hey, have you ever thought about maybe like joining a gym? Actually, I swim pretty frequently. Hey, have you ever thought about eating? Like, yeah, I read white papers on hunter-gatherer paleo diet models and stuff. I'm really interested in that world. I know I could coach you. Well, hey, have you ever thought about like, yeah, I've done all that. I can't, if I start losing weight, I can't go to work because I'm in such pain. Thank you for helping. And so that's been a deep frustration in my life, you know, and I've tried a couple things that look like they were going to work and I'm like, okay, maybe, maybe not. And none of them have worked. So a few months ago, I started going to see a chiropractor I'm friends with who's a functional doc, Dr. Mario Chavez here in Denver. And this is a big fat shout out for Dr. Chavez. He does what they call NUCCA, N-U-C-C-A, and all he does is adjust the atlas joint. It's just a very gentle, I mean, if I didn't know him, I would have thought it was snake oil and walked out because he barely touched me. He puts you in this position and gets you all lined up on his table, cranks your head up on this little thing that supports it a certain way, and then just barely touches you behind the ear with the edge of his thumb. And I'm like, come on, I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. So I kept going back, and I went because I was having some neck pain. And I've had real bad upper back pain and low back pain, and my knees are trashed, and pain in my feet and stuff. And so I went because of the neck pain, but by the time I got an appointment, the neck pain had kind of taken care of itself, come back sometimes. So that kind of stopped all of a sudden. And then the pain in the upper back started going away, and I kept going twice a week for a while, then once a week. And then the low back pain kind of got isolated enough to where I could tell when it was happening, why it was happening. And I replaced my chair at work. Thanks to the AI, they bought me a proper chair that I needed. And And that's mostly out of the way. And then it started kind of, I went through this weird phase where I had real serious pain in my, my hip flexors. My one hip flexor, the other would be like really off. And it's funny. It's like when you go to this chiropractor, you stand on this, on these two scales, and he can tell which side you're holding your weight on, because it'll be like way more or less. And I'm down, I was as high as 70 pounds heavier on my left foot at one point. And I come in, and most of the time I'm holding my adjustment now, and I'm within 2 to 5 pounds side to side. And I feel the difference. Well, anyway, I talked to Mario Chavez about this situation, and he kind of asked me some questions and talked to me about my diet and some stuff. And he made some suggestions on some supplements that he thought my body might not be processing a couple things correctly, and that maybe this would help, you know. So I started taking some standard process stuff. And I also started, I kind of cheated. I've been taking a medication that I take for flare-ups, very small quantities, to kind of help with the flare-ups, to help prevent them, which is something I'd resisted doing a lot too. But the combination of the two and everything, I am 6 days in, almost 7 days in, to a new ketogenic diet, and I'm 10 pounds down in under a week. Now, that's mostly water weight. But if I can replicate what I did last time, it'll be 16 to 20 pounds a month. And it's really easy. I don't get hungry. I have to remind myself to eat. And so I'm kind of letting myself have a little hope for the first time in a while on this, that, you know, between the combination of supplements and medicine and changes to how I do a ketogenic diet, less protein than I used to do, different fats, the way I structure the meals, the amount of water I'm drinking, the type of exercise I'm doing and stuff, I think I might have a shot at it again. And so this is going to be an ongoing theme you're going to hear on this show, because if I do start losing weight again and I get back down to my normal weight, and that's going to be something that's going to absolutely change my life, and it's going to change the way that I view things, the way I interact with people. And who knows? Oh boy, might even end up married when it's all said and done. I'm not ugly. I'm just fat, you know. So that's something that's been huge just in the last week in my life. So, man, I'm skipping over so many stories and so much stuff that's happened since I recorded the last time. But I want to end on a concept. I want to do a whole show. I'm reading Disarming Beauty by Father Julian Caron, who's the current head of Communion and Liberation. And CL is a group that I'm kind of like tangentially attached to. I'm ideologically, ironically, to use that word, since they're very contra ideology, but I'm giving them a high five on most things here, and I'm very much, I have a lot of friends in the movement. I definitely consider myself part of the movement. There are things that are kind of intrinsic, like weekly school community and stuff, that I don't really discipline myself to do in the movement. But I definitely, CL has been a huge part of my life in the last 5 years. So the guy that replaced Monsignor Giuzzani when he died is a guy named Father Julian Caron. He's a Spanish priest, and he just released a book called Disarming Beauty. And in some ways, it's the other side of the coin to things like the Benedict Option and Esalen's Out of the Ashes, or even Archbishop Chaput's Strangers in a Strange Land. It's kind of the other side of the coin on how to interact with society. And, man, I tell you what, I just can't even get the thing read. I'm going to have a day glow and underlined copy of this book when I'm done. So I'm hopefully on the new podcast, when I get that going, the interview podcast, I'm going to at least get Father Jose Medina on the line, but I'd like to sit down with, Father Caron. He is going to be in Denver for about 18 hours. Over in the fall. So But I can catch him on over the internet too. So I'd like to talk to them, but the ideas in this book are going to be coming out on this show quite a bit, cause I'm reading it slowly and, I'm finding it very impactful. So, if you're in the inner circle here and you want to play along, I would deeply, deeply recommend, you go buy a copy of Disarming Beauty by Father Julian Caron. And you could read it along with me, and you'll kind of see what I'm talking about. You'll probably get ahead of me quick because I read so slowly. But one concept that came up, and I realized it was so much at the core of what we do with Calyx and what we do in these spaces that we build, and why that does really account. It really is evangelization. In this sense, but not in towards the end, but not in the same method people would think about with that. So Caron talks about in the first chapter how, I can't remember exactly how he says it, and I didn't drag my copy out, but he says something along the lines of like, partial answers come from insufficient questions. So we think, oh, they're accepting bad answers to their questions, and we blame the answers, so to speak. And he's kind of saying, no, that's a true answer to a certain extent to the question he asked. He just didn't ask a deep enough question. He didn't ask the right question. If you don't have the right answers, you're not asking the right questions, right? And then, so then you're like, well, why aren't people asking the right questions? And he says it's because we don't have our desire awakened. And I've talked about this a lot, we ratchet down our desire to match what we think exists. And if something inside of us is pulling on us, we're desiring something, we're ordered to something, we're longing for something, and we don't see it around us, and matter and energy and all this that we see, this pinchy stuff, as Molly Gustin used to call it, this, the stuff that I can bang on or break or fold, all this pinchy stuff. If that doesn't match it, then you go, oh, well, then I'm longing for something else. And you take that as evidence. Some people ratchet it down and they just go, oh, look, all I want is some money and a new truck every year and a hot wife and a double wide instead of this trailer. I mean, whatever it takes, or a nicer house in a better suburb on an even more isolated cul-de-sac. Whichever version you're playing in, but the question is, do you have your desire awakened? Have you ratcheted it down? Are you living the right questions? Not are you asking the right question? Are you living the right questions? Are you living as a longing for the question? Are you living as a question that the answer is the right one? And what Caron ends up saying is, how do you have your desire awakened? And he says the same thing that Plato said about the good. You get around people whose desire has been awakened. That's how you have your desire awakened, is by being around people who have their desire awakened. And an awakened desire begets awakened desire. And I think that's been true in my life. When I look at the people that I choose to spend time around the most, the people that I'm always drawn back to and the people I come away from discontent with what I used to be content with, especially intellectually and spiritually and artistically and how I live my life, morally even. Those are the people that have really had their desire awakened. And I'll travel airplanes to sleep on their couch to hang out with those people. So that's kind of, I think, what we're up to. I think that's hopefully what I'm up to with this show. I think it's what I'm up to with Calyx, is to try to just let my desire be awakened enough and then communicate that in some way and then interact with you guys so that your awakened desire, your desire, your interface with reality, your particular longing that is you can awaken parts of me, so to speak, back and forth. I think ultimately that takes place in community, in a place, and that's why we build places with Calyx, but I think it can happen through media to a certain extent too, because I've experienced it. And that's what I'm, so that's kind of what we're trying to do. And I've talked about this before, but this is a new book and he's talking about it with a little different language. And that's what we're up to. So, yeah, go buy Disarming Beauty by Father Julian Caron. It would be worth reading. It's good stuff. Man, so much going on. So many cool stories to tell you. But it's an hour, so I'm going to cut it. And, so we're back. I tell you what, going along the same idea about not living in the moment and everything, part of what kept me from recording is that once I hadn't recorded for a couple weeks, then 3 weeks, then maybe 4 weeks, or there's a month, you know, I was like, oh God, this has to be good. Like when I come back, I have to come back with a bang. I have to come back with this really detailed show and this really all these great points and everything. And there was now this kind of a pressure, and every moment that I had that I could have sat down and started recording again, there was kind of like this ideal was bearing down on me, and I didn't. So I almost let that get me today. I'm not having a great day. Here's a rant real fast. I want to end on a rant. Put this on Facebook and it's getting a lot of likes. I need to go to confession. And I've sat through two lines that weren't that long and not gotten in to see the priest go to confession. So, Catholic people, if you didn't make an appointment and you're not going to a priest's office or something, if you're just in line in the 30 minutes before Mass or whatever, like when your church has confession, you need to keep that the number, kind, act of contrition, go. As one of my friends said, be blunt, be brief, and be gone. You know, this is not the time for spiritual direction. Some priests are kind of long-winded and like to give you a lot of direction. They don't make it clear to your priest, if it's someone that doesn't know you, that you are a practicing Catholic, that you maybe have a spiritual director and a normal confessor. You are surrounded by good Catholic friends. This isn't his only shot to get you. And just thank him, you know, because it's the line. I see this all the time. And sometimes when I don't need to go to confession, I'll go to Mass. And it's 20 minutes before Mass. And I'm just kind of there praying and getting recollected. And you'll see this huge line of people. And 3/4 of them to sit down because I'd never get a chance to go to confession. So today I was at a church and there were 6 people in line. We had 25 minutes. And number 4 out of 5 people went in and did like a 15-minute confession. Now, I would like to think that this person was like on their last leg and the priest saw, oh, if I don't talk to her, she's about to go jump off a roof or something like that. But this person was like super pious, like really hyper devotional and stuff. And I'm guessing that she probably goes to confession a lot, and she probably didn't rob any banks or anything. And she's someone that is probably obsesses over it. And I'm judging her, I admit it. And I'm going to add that to my next confession if I ever get to see a priest again. But and so it's funny. I put this on Facebook today and it just lit up. Yeah, so you know what? It's good to schedule a time with a priest that you and go to confession and really, really hash it out and do some spiritual direction, really open up about scars and wounds and what might be the root of why this is happening to you and why are you struggling with the same sin over and over. That is invaluable. Do it. That 20 minutes before Mass, where there's a line of people, is not the time to do that. So I was frustrated. 2 times in the last couple of days, in the last 2 days, I've tried to go to confession. 2 times I've waited a line out. And I was just like, not having a great day. I was very frustrated and I almost didn't record today. But I decided, you know what? The only people that care that I'm not recording are kind of my core listeners. And you guys, the community around this show, this is what you're used to, probably what you've been missing. So, all right. So there's something for you to listen to. Allie, you can start painting again. Poor Allie Cavanaugh didn't know what to do. I cannot believe that someone that talented loves to listen to me while she paints. But she was texting me just going like, I need your show. Come on. Why don't you do a show? So there's such good people, such good, interesting people in my audience. And I am so glad and so privileged to be able to do this kind of thing. So I really, really appreciate you listening. And all right, I'm back. Here we go. You ready? You ready for it? Are you ready? Ready? All right. Let's pull the plug. Pop the cork on another episode of The Counter Position. Thanks for coming.
I'm a great kind of wall. I'm an empire to fall. I'm throwing down moms. I may flee. Lift my shoes. Oh, the only ones with souls. In borders, we will walk down Massachusetts blocks. We're free, we're free, we're free, oh what the hell. I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew. I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. The only one on track. Then where our sugar falls with all our sugar skulls, dancing, dancing, dancing on the Day of the Dead. And it's dark when Hades below, and you can hear the people singing. Please don't stay, but please don't go. Lin how we crave hanging, and it's dark when Hades below, and you can hear the people singing. Please don't stay. But please don't go. Well, I'm stone and cold hard lead. Where I'm plastic stripped of edge. I'm woven in the earth from golden straw. Well, I'm rosy painted flesh. I'm romantic in my guess. I'm sculpted by the letters of the law. And if my eyes, oh, are windows to my heart, then all this color glass that painter's palettes mash are the colors, all the colors of my soul. Well, I'm a stoic totem pole. I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. I've bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull. And everything is buried jewels. There were miners with tinker tools. We're kings and queens and fools. Oh, I'm perfectly imperfect, cause I know I am. Take your place, marble stone.